dress imperfectly today, and you know just put something on that didn't match. And after I got it done, I looked at it and I said, "You have done that so perfectly." I sat there looking in the sock drawer for like 5 minutes trying to figure out which color would not match. That's pathetic. I gotta tell you that is pathetic. Okay, just out of curiosity, how many people here would say they suffer from perfectionism? I know I do. Some of you. Okay. It's no fun because it adds so much anxiety to your life, worrying that you're not going to measure up. And really what it boils down to, I think, is it's worrying about whether you're not going to measure up to that voice in your head. And it doesn't matter where that voice in your head came from. Probably mine came from my father, I'm almost certain. But, you know, there's that little voice in there that says, do this, do that, you haven't done that well enough. And it's berating. And it's kind of crippling. And it's something that has to be addressed, just like so many other things that have to be addressed. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to zip through a list of 10 symptoms that I ran into that were pretty good descriptions of perfectionism. One, okay, just see if any of these fit. You don't leave any room for mistakes. It's got to be done right. Okay? Very specific way that things have to be done and should be done. And the bad thing is you tend to project that onto other people, so it becomes you should be doing that, or why don't you do this? You know, I'm giving people advice all the time, constantly. You should be doing it this way. You have an all or nothing approach to things. You either got to do it well, or you sit and balk and won't do it at all because you're afraid of the outcome. It won't come out right. Everything ends up being about the end result. You just want to ensure that the end result is attained. Otherwise, you feel annoyed or possibly devastated. You become depressed when you don't achieve your goals. If it doesn't work out, if it flops, that's a real bummer. It ends up being really heart-wrenching. You set really extremely high standards for yourself. Exactly. Because whatever a perfectionist puts on themselves, which is kind of coming into a little bit later on, you end up projecting that onto someone else. So other people have to live up to your high standards. Success is never really enough. Once you succeed, then you up the ante, you raise the bar. You want it 2 times the first time, or the next time you want it 4 times. Then you got to achieve 5 times, then 7 times. I heard that actually preached from this pulpit a long time ago. It was a guy who came in and was speaking. He was a money manager. He was like, manifest, 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 you know. So it became, well, you know, set your goal, and then if you achieve that financial goal, you have to raise it higher. Then if you get there, well, then you have to raise it even higher. And I was sitting there thinking, isn't this a spirituality? Oh, well. You constantly spot mistakes when others don't see any. Sometimes these mistakes are real, but most of the times they're self-imagined. And the last one, you often spend copious amounts of time just to perfect something. It's not uncommon to sacrifice your sleep, your personal time, your well-being, just to get to that, just to accomplish that one goal. And it becomes exhausting. And my nephews, which are the only real family I've got, And they know I'm a perfectionist, and they nagged me about it. And they gave me this t-shirt one time. Oh, I should have worn it today. See? Anyway, it says, I'm imperfect. I didn't wear it today. It says, how does it say that? It says, I have CDO. And underneath it, it says, that's OCD, but the letters are in order the way they should be. Yes. And I was thinking, that was bringing that up, because when I first moved here, and I was fixing my house up, redecorating it, I'll wait for a second, because I know you're struggling. Yeah, I know it's hard. I was getting the house fixed up and completely remodeling it, and they know how I am. And they would call about every other night just to make sure that I had quit working and that I would be willing to go to sleep. And when they kept doing that, I went, oh my gosh, I'm worse than I think I am. Did any of those things fit with any of you? Yeah. No, okay. And it's kind of it's a good litmus test, I think. And there's really some serious downsides to perfectionism. One, this is bad for your health. It wears you out trying to constantly perform and to get everything right and to not make mistakes. The stress is just bad on your body. You don't get enough sleep. And like I said earlier, we get into, at least for me, get into a project and won't quit. And can I kind of talk about you, Rhonda?
Okay.
Now, you know, Rhonda is just a teeny bit of a perfectionist. Teeny bit.
Just a little.
And I'll come in here sometimes in the office and it'll be a little late, and Rhonda will still be working away, you know, but there's, when that financial report comes out, it is flawless, you know? And I know it's hard. It's, at least I know I wear myself out. Another downside to perfectionism is you end up with a really skewed view of reality. And that skewed view is that everything is supposed to be perfect. And because of that, we become really judgmental of other people. And everything
seeming flawed because reality isn't the way we think it's supposed to be. It's almost a delusion, at least in my case, where I look around and somebody makes a mistake and I'm like, that's not the way it's supposed to be. That's not the way reality is. And I get judgmental and cranky, at least within myself. I never express it. But the way a perfectionist sees the world is not the way the world is. And so nothing out there ends up fitting correctly. Does that make sense? Okay. Really sad part of that is you end up losing your compassion for other people. That's the very hardest part. And me being a compassionate person, I then end up beating myself up for judging other people. It ends up being a circle. Perfectionists invariably project their perfectionism onto other people. It's just unavoidable. We believe that our level of perfection is the norm. And those who aren't measuring up, well, they're wrong. That's just the way the thought process works. We become angry, demanding, can get cranky and pushy towards those that are really living or working on an appropriate level. Whenever I do a talk here at Spiritual Light Center, or whenever I create a newsletter, I don't know if anybody here knows this, but I do it always for myself. I pick the topics because there's something of, say, a newsletter I need to research. It's something I need to deal with. If I do a talk, it's something that, it's an issue that I need to address within myself. I know that sounds a little bit selfish, but that's too bad because it's just the way it is. That's the way I do it. Recently, I did a created a newsletter on judgmentalism. I can't remember. Does anybody remember that? A few months ago, it was on reducing our judgment. And that's because within my heart, even though I truly care about people, I project my perfectionism onto them. And it wasn't, honestly, it wasn't until I came to the Spiritual Light Center. Boy, this is hard to say. It wasn't until I came to the Spiritual Light Center. I was 60 years old when I arrived. It wasn't until I was after 60 years old that it struck me that because people aren't measuring up to my own level of perception, just because they aren't measuring up does not mean that they are wrong. Are you following that? Just because a person doesn't measure up to what I think is the way they should behave, that does not mean they're wrong. I'm just going to go ahead and say this. Is Sue on there? Okay. Well, Sue is one of my dearest friends. I love Sue. And Sue has got some crazy behavior patterns, and she knows that, and I could say that. And if she was sitting right here, she'd go, yeah. And I used to judge her terribly for that until I stopped and I realized, Bill, this is your issue. It doesn't have anything to do with Sue. And as soon as that struck me, she became one of my closest friends because I was able to let go of that judgment. And that now is something that I'm trying to apply to each person that I know. Every one of us are crazy, and every one of us have quirks. Am I wrong there? Huh? Yes, ma'am. Yeah, Janet, is that correct? Absolutely, right? Okay. Yeah, we're all freaking nuts. All right, let's just face it. We've all got our issues. We've all got our personality quirks. That's why we're here. We're on this world to grow. If you didn't have them, you might as well just ascend into heaven right now because you're wasting your time on this planet. So, yeah, write that down, okay? Am I getting some agreement online? Okay, so if I turn around and I see somebody and I see a personality quirk, what the hell am I doing judging it? That's their ticket to be here. Okay, so let up, Bill. It's about time I did. And I'm just learning that other people's quirks does not mean that they are flawed. Other people's quirks does not mean that there's something wrong or something I should judge. There was a thing I saw on Facebook. I've seen it several times. I wish I could remember who the quote is from. I believe it was Ram Dass. It was Ram Dass, okay? It was a picture of a tree that kind of went weird. And it says, if you're walking in the forest and you see a tree that's bent or unusual, you don't sit back and judge the tree and say there's something wrong with you. You look at it and it's like, it's interesting. Look at that tree, right? I don't know if any of you walk in the woods enough to catch to recognize that. But we do that with the tree. We go, that's really interesting. We don't sit back and judge it. as being incorrect. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could be that way toward the entire population of the planet? Here's another one. I kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but one of the downsides of perfectionism is that we lose track of the truth. We lie to ourselves, okay? We lose track of the truth. What that means is that I get to the point of not seeing myself as I truly am, because I put this big mask on, and the mask that I put on is truly not plastic, tell you, it's made not to see through, and I lose track of the reality of who I am. And this is going to offend somebody. Guaranteed, this one of my next thing is going to offend somebody. So get ready. One person who is often glorified, but I think did tremendous harm, was Norman Vincent Peale. And he is a real founder of New Thought. And very grandiose man, which is very typical of a person who's perfectionistic. They usually act very grand. They can act grandiosely. What he preached was a refusal to acknowledge any negativity or any problem, and commanded that from the pulpit that people only speak what is positive. Never speak a negativity. Never speak anything other than what is positive. When somebody comes up to you and says, "How are you?" you're supposed to respond with, "Oh, I'm doing just great. Everything is wonderful," no matter how you feel. So he said, let's all put on a mask and act as if we are flawless, as if there is no problem, as if we have no issues whatsoever. We deny that we're working on anything. If somebody comes up to you, I won't go there. If somebody comes up to you and says, what would you say is the number one thing that you would need to address at this point in your life in order to move forward? And we all have those issues. And he would say, oh, do you never acknowledge that? You just say, no, I'm fine. I'm perfect. There's nothing wrong. I have no growth points. In other words, don't face the facts. I'm not speaking politically here, but just based on a book that I read, Donald Trump's father was an avid follower of Norman Vincent Peale. And therefore, Donald Trump grew up never allowing himself to acknowledge any negativity or any hardship or any difficulty whatsoever. Everything was supposed to be perfect. And this is particularly sad because his mother was dying of a very painful bone disease. And no one would acknowledge it. No one would say, gee, Mom, I'm so sorry that you're having so much pain. It would always be, this is just great. You're going to be just fine by tomorrow. As she was slowly collapsing within to the point she could never walk again. What a horrible thing to do to your mother. When this particular favored son, who actually had always been a bully, became president, he refused to acknowledge any problems within the country. Everything was great. It's just fine. We're wonderful. And COVID was taking over and he wouldn't do anything about it. And it wasn't because, it was basically because of the way he was raised. You could not acknowledge a problem. Always minimized what was happening and saying, as I can remember clearly, it will just go away. It'll just go away. We don't need to do anything. His spiritual equal, who had this exact same conservative evangelical positivism approach to everything, is Bolsonaro, the president of Brazil, He also denied COVID-19 and refused to do anything about it. And so from the very beginning, the number one country to be overcome with this disease was which country? And still is. Which always, which? US and Brazil, always. You see the list, it's always. The United States is way up there. And number two is Brazil. And why are they that way? Because of the refusal to acknowledge a problem. Everything has to be perfect. There are no issues. Those who deny the inconvenient negative truths tend to speak in large, big, bold, grandiosity terms, and often they won't look you in the eye, and often seem to live in a world of fantasy projections. Now, this is just my opinion, but if God is the foundation of anything, number one, I would say God is love. That would be just the bottom line. If I were to say God is, which is really pretty, it's not a very good theological way to look at the divine, because you can't really define God. But if I would say, well, God is love, okay, if I would say beyond that, what would God be? And I was thinking about this last night, because I talked to Ron and it was after 5 o'clock and I hadn't even started a talk. And so I thought, I better get this talk going. As a matter of fact, I was talking to Doug too later. And do you remember me saying I hadn't even started my talk? Eek. Yeah, really. And that's part of perfectionism too, because part of perfectionism is what? Procrastination. Oh, I got it in spades. But but if I thought, well, if God is anything else besides love, what would God be? And what it struck me is God is truth. God is truth. Whatever truth is, to me, truth is something I worship. That may sound weird, but truth is something I worship. Truth is something I want to surrender myself to. I guess that's my scientific way of looking at the world. You know, that I don't want to start, if I started a scientific experiment, I wouldn't want to start with preconceived notions, because that would skew everything I do so that the outcome ends up being the way I want it to be. That has nothing to do with truth. And if our scientists did that, we'd never made it to the moon, for one thing. God is truth. And God is, and that is something I wish to surrender to. I know in the Bible, Christ often said that he was truth and that the words that he and the Father spoke were truth. And another thing that it said is that the truth will set you free. Perfectionism is an absolute denial of truth. Perfectionism is wearing a mask and acting as if. Perfectionism is looking at everyone else and expecting them to live up to a reality that doesn't exist. If I looked at somebody that had a character defect and I judged them, then what I'm doing is denying truth. That's the way they are. I need to surrender to that and accept each person, including myself, as I am. And once I can accept myself and all things that exist around me as they are, then I am surrendering to truth. And perfectionism is an absolute denial of that. The truth is not a twisted manipulation of reality of what you'd prefer. It's not a denial of what is. The truth that will set you free is right in front of you. In everyone I see and in everything that I see, acceptance and surrender to the truth of reality gives me the strength to therefore rise above where I am, if that's what is meant to be. It may not be. I think some of you know that I've got pain in my feet, neuropathy, and it drives me crazy. It can really be painful. And some people will come to me and say, well, that shouldn't be. You need to ask God to take that away. I'm going to go a little bit, push this a little beyond. I was not planning to say this, so I didn't prepare it in my head, but there's a place in the Bible where Paul is talking about some personal issue that he has. And it's pretty clearly a physical problem because he calls it a thorn in the flesh. And he says, 3 times I asked God to take this away from me. Does anybody that's into the Bible know what God's response to him was? God, he says, but God said no. God said, I gave you that thorn in the flesh for a reason, so that it would help you to grow. It would keep you in prayer. It would keep you humble. There is a reason why you have this issue, this problem. And I don't know whether this neuropathy is a thorn in the flesh for me to keep me humble and to keep me in prayer, to keep me compliant, supple, like clay, moldable. I don't know, but it may be. And if that's the case, that's all right. Again, that is part of just accepting even what's going on with my own body and not trying to be too perfectionistic about it. If you're going to cure something, and I'm not talking, if you're going to like perfectionism, going to cure something, well, if you're going to cure anything, don't you have to know what the cause of it was? Yeah, you got to figure out what caused it before you can figure out what's going to cure it. By the way, that's one interesting thing about neuropathy. That's why they can't cure it, because they don't have a single clue what it is or what causes it. So nobody has any idea what to do about it. So what about perfectionism? Where does it come from? What causes it? And I thought about this pretty deeply. For me, okay, in my case, I was raised in a family where my father was exceedingly perfectionistic. I mean, I'm just off the scale. Hello. Goodbye. He was off the scales perfectionistic. There we go. And he expected everybody else to do the same. And he was abusive. So therefore, everybody was terrified about not measuring up to his level. So we were kind of browbeaten into perfectionism. And the other side of it was, and this is really pretty bad, is I was his son, but my sister was not. She was from a previous marriage of my mother. And he was raised in this, originally came from the way off in the hills of the middle of the Ozarks in Arkansas. And that came with that mentality that blood is thicker than water. Well, she wasn't blood. So therefore, his family pretty much rejected her. So I was therefore labeled as the one who was supposed to be the perfect one between the two. Are you following me? See where that is coming from? So therefore, that placed an expectation like a carrot in front of me that I could never achieve. So I know where my perfectionism comes from. Basically, it comes from abuse. And I think pretty much I as I see it, perfectionism is the result of abuse. Some form of child abuse. It may be emotional, maybe physical, it might be sexual. Wherever it is, something back there told you that you're not good enough. And a child has no choice but to ultimately believe what adults tell them. And if that adult is there saying to them through some action or some behavior that they're not good enough, then that child's going to believe it. And the bottom line is, perfectionism becomes a form of overcompensating for a belief that we are inadequate. If perfectionism is an overcompensation for a deep-rooted belief in our own imperfection, then the obvious cure would be to ultimately work through that to recognize our unimaginable value and worth of who you are personally. That's really tough for a perfectionist to swallow. It takes a long time and a lot of work to go back and work on that root injury that caused us to believe in our own imperfection. One time I was talking to a client that had a really deep-rooted sense of self-worthlessness. And I remember something just hit me. Have you ever recognized when it was God speaking through you? Yeah. Because God will do that. It'll be, this is Spirit speaking right through me. And at that moment, I knew it was, because this stuff just came out of my mouth. And what it was I said to her, imagine this. Imagine that when you're born, your grandfather gave you and all of your siblings an inheritance. And the inheritance that he gave was this ball of pure sterling silver, so that when they became an adult or older, this would help them get through college or whatever. And okay, so the kid's 5 years old. What's a five-year-old going to do with the ball of silver?
Throw it around.
Play with it, right? Okay, so then he gets to be 12 years old. What's a 12-year-old going to do with a ball of silver?
Show it to all his friends.
Yeah, maybe do that, you know, pass it around, you know, maybe use it for a baseball or something, you know. He just didn't recognize the value, okay? Well, okay, then the kid gets to be 17 and he wants a new car. And so he's going to go cash in that ball of silver, get a new car. Mom sees that and she hides it. You know, say, hey, you ain't going to get it for a while. Well, eventually they lose track of where this ball of silver is. And it's kind of forgotten. So one day, she's grown up in her 20s, moved away from the house, and she gets a new dog. And she wants to come home and show the new dog to mom. So she comes with this cool new dog, and, you know, Doug, you can relate to this. You know, and here, mom, here's the dog, takes it off the leash. Well, the first thing the dog does is run underneath the house. So the girl's like, they're crawling through the mud. Come here. And finally the dogs come to her. A dog comes to her, and then she looks in the ground, and there's this thing, this ball. And she goes, oh my gosh, I haven't seen that forever. And it's all dirty. And it's all beat up. And it's all encrusted with mud. She knocks a little mud off and, you know, there it is. Okay, so I'm going to ask you, what is it? What is it that she found there in the mud? What is it? Bye. It's a silver ball, but it's dirty and it's tarnished and it's kind of dinged up. But what is it? It's silver. Why is it silver? It has no choice. It's silver because that's the way it was made. And I would say that same thing about each one of you. Doesn't matter how tarnished you get or dinged up or dirty. There's nothing you can do about who you are. And who you are is greater than a ball of silver. If you question your value, I believe our feelings and our self-worth come from our actions. If you question your value, start doing some anonymous kind acts, maybe one every day. Pay for somebody's bill at the grocery store or a restaurant, or call somebody that you know is lonely that you haven't called them. Send a spontaneous friendship card to someone. Spirit will guide you into what to do. And as you continue doing things that are actually equivalent to who you are, because who you are is a kind person within. You're that ball of silver. You just start acting that way, and eventually you'll come to believe it. It's kind of like fake it till you make it. That's just my suggestions, so that we end up recognizing the goodness that is within each one of us and begin to express it into an external pattern that you can begin to see, so that you can teach yourself of who you truly are. Because this, to me, is the cure of perfectionism. If I come to realize my true value, then there's no need for me to put on a mask anymore. I realize that I am that person that was the carrot I used to chase. That's all I got to say.